Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Monday edition of The Yard. And I can tell you, Mississippi State football keeping us reporters and journalists busy these days. A lot of media opportunities. You know, last week we had 19 interviews. 19. We're going to have availability. We had availability today. We got to see a little practice. We'll talk a little bit about that a little later in the show. Tomorrow, practice is closed for us, but we will get some player interviews. Practice closed on Wednesday, but we'll get a chance to speak with Jeff Lebby, our first of two opportunities this week. Thursday is the NCAA-mandated day off, and then on Friday, media get a chance to watch a little practice, and then we'll get to talk to players. And then on Saturday, guess what? Practice is closed, but more player availability, and then a scrimmage on Sunday that we will not be able to watch, but we'll be able to talk to Coach Lebby afterwards. So 6 of 7 days, Mississippi State making opportunities for us to talk to players and Coach Lebby. So much appreciate that, which leads me to a programming note. I will be in San Antonio, Texas, Wednesday through Friday. So I will record your Wednesday show Tuesday. I record your weekend show Saturday. So when you get out Wednesday morning, you'll have a Boneyard, and then at some point on Saturday this weekend, you'll have another as you're out cutting the grass, whatever, you know, doing some yard work. So that's the plan. Got to head to San Antonio for the True Rest Convention. You guys say, what's True Rest, Steve? Well, you know, it's our new business. Been open now about 6 months. It's crazy to think about that. It's become a huge part of our lives. And if you hadn't come and float yet, you should. Many of you Boneyard listeners have, and I appreciate that more than I can say. But we're going to go out there and, you know, may win awards. You know, you never know, right? Could be Rookie of the Year. Could be. But we'll go out there and learn a few new things, kind of what's happening in the industry, and we'll come back to Stark Vegas and yeah, do it again next year. Last year we went to San Diego. I love San Diego. Have you ever been to San Diego? It's great. I get to travel extensively, and San Diego is a place I've always wanted to go. It's beautiful. People are great, too. Not as much hustle and bustles there as you see a lot of other big cities, but had a great time there. Looking forward to getting back out to San Antonio. Of course, I've been there a few times, covered the U.S. Army All-American game there when I worked with Scout a few times. And so it's cool. My girls went out and danced San Antonio, too, and enjoyed the Riverwalk. So, you know, we'll see. I don't make the travel arrangements. You know, I just go where she tells me. And so that's what we're doing. We're leaving early Wednesday morning, getting back late Friday night. Can make it happen quick. A lot of other people are going to stay across the week. And they asked me to come speak at that convention. There's another convention, a floating convention on Saturday and Sunday. I said, you know, we can't do it. You know, just nothing against public speaking. But I just, you know, can't be gone that long. The dogs would miss me. And I think you would too. So that's the plan. And so just to kind of keep you abreast, again, Wednesday's show will be available Wednesday morning because I will record on Tuesday. And then we'll turn around and record the weekend show on Saturday. So if you don't hear from me on Friday, you don't have to message me on social media and say, hey, Boneyard today? Yeah. I tell you, it's been later and later for me. But a lot of it's because of the fact that, with football stuff going on, and I feel like we haven't really had a summer break. You know, with the draft and with portal recruiting and things of that nature, it just seems like it's gone from one thing to another. And one of the things that I love about football season, once we get into just regular football coverage, that things are very regimented, right? So we'll have Coach Levy on Monday. We'll get our player interviews on Tuesday. And then kind of have the rest of the week to work that content out for you. And, of course, we'll be doing a lot of other stuff, too, reaching out to people within our industry and getting you insight and intel. We've got a couple of things we're working on, for sure. And so I share all of that with you because I think it's important to know what's going on. But, yeah, 19 interviews last week, and then I suspect we'll have at least two a day this week, in addition to Jeff Lebby. And so what's that? Four player availabilities and two coaches. So at least 10 interviews this week. And I checked yesterday because I saw some, let's just say, disturbances in the Bulldog force about, hey, we're not getting a lot of access, and hey, what's going on with this? And so I reached out to, I don't know, half dozen SEC peers and said, hey, what's happening with you guys? I'm just curious how we're doing. And I would say outside of Arkansas, we're doing the best. Of the schools that I reached out to, we talked to Dave Johnson, of course, Jason Caldwell at Auburn, Connors Carroll out in A&M, a few people, just kind of reached out, and pretty happy by comparison, the Mississippi State, the access they've afforded us. I want to see more practice, but I don't think it'll ever be like it was with Leach. Mike Leach absolutely did not care. What's funny about that, too, because there are a lot of people out there that would like me to just perpetuate the fraud, but I'm not going to. When Mike Leach was here, we had open practices basically up until the final week, like the dress rehearsal week. And I would say year 2021 and 2022, I would say I was the only person that went to every practice in its totality. I missed some practices in, I guess I missed some practice in 2022. I went to all of them in 21, missed some a few in 22. Of course, some folks used to work for me, work with me, should I say, nicer way of saying it. They were regular attendees as well, one more than the other, but I mean, that's life. But there were a lot of other people on your media beat that didn't come to practice. And I think they'd be fine if we never had practice. It's hot out there. I get it. But I think to myself, as hot and sweaty as I may get, I can't begin to imagine being a football player, getting all those pads and getting out there and running around in this heat. And be careful out there, high school kids. It seems like every year we hear about some tragedy. Be careful. Hydrate yourself, not just the day of practice, but the days leading up to it. Your body needs that water, the sodium, the electrolytes, all that good stuff. But, when we had a lot of player access, our player viewing periods, not a lot of people in the media took advantage of that. They won't tell you that, but it's true. And some of those people no longer on the beat either. And so I say that just because they would just show up to get interviews. So it's kind of a bare minimum type thing. I've just not been that guy. And I used to like going out there hanging out too. And, Leach come by and visit and, hey, what's going on? Now last year with Arnett, we had some availability early, but things tightened up, as you would imagine. So there are some schools out there not allowing hardly any practice viewing. And so my whole thing about that is we want to be your eyes and ears. But, the school makes their own rules. I remember when I lived in Baton Rouge and helped out some with Randy Rosetta on the LSU side. And then sometimes I'd go to LSU practice. And so basically, when you went to LSU's practice, here's what you did. You walked into this gated practice area behind the Cox Communications Center there. and you could walk along the practice fields and just kind of observe, you know, who was in a boot that day, who was in a non-contact jersey, and then you just kind of made your rounds through both of those fields, and like 10 minutes, you're done. That's it. That was the only practice viewing we could do, and that's LSU. You know, a lot of people say, well, we need to act like a big-time program. I would say LSU is a big-time program. And along those lines, you know what the LSU media has had through the first week of camp? They had Brian Kelly one time. That's it. No assistants, no players. They get some players today. You know, so it's interesting to see how other schools do that. But what happens is we only are only acutely aware of what happens with our program. And we think, hey, everybody else is doing it, so why can't we? And then you find out that everybody else isn't doing it. And I would say Arkansas is the only school that I've reached out to that I have friends that cover those schools and found out that they're probably getting a little more access than us. And that Sam Pittman's kind of been that way throughout his tenure and probably needs some friends in the media anyway, considering what they're facing this year. Kind of wanted to get that out of the way. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. Since we have been together, I have partaken of the Comeback Burger. Now, it's only available this month. And it is absolutely outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. Now, Ian, my youngest, works at Bulldog Burger Company in Starkville. He says, hey, I want a contest promoting that burger. I haven't seen anybody finish it. Well, you know what? Dear old dad finished it. And I was probably full with the couple bites left to go, but it was so delicious, I had to knock it out. And not to mention, I wanted to be able to tell him I did it, right? It's true. I only eat one big a meal a day. And that's the thing about eating Bulldog Burger Company. I feel like, you know what, hey, I can have Bulldog Burger Company for lunch and maybe just have like a bowl of cereal or, you know, heat up a burrito or something for dinner. It's so filling. The portions are absolutely outstanding. I didn't get the spring rolls. I mean, I'm trying to save some women for the rest of you guys, but I had the chicken wings. And I think they're getting bigger. I do. I think they're getting bigger. They're always been, you know, very flavorful. But had some chicken wings, and I got the big order so I can save some. Had that for lunch yesterday. It's true. I get my money's worth when I go to Bulldog Burger Company. I get as much food as I can. I enjoy it. And if I don't finish it, I have it tomorrow for lunch. Two meals in one sometimes. Love it, man. Three great locations to serve you. University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Hey, the wife had the Comeback Burger as well. She added onions to hers. You know that I did not. You know that I did not. But it comes with lettuce, tomato, cheese, I guess. And then the comeback sauce. And this, I mean, it's just kind of a straight ahead burger, you know, and they just kind of add the comeback sauce on there. And you can get it on the side, too. So you can kind of control the distribution of the comeback sauce. Yeah, you like the stuff? I do. I do. Be sure and check it out. You'll be glad you did. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. Okay. Let's talk about this player observation period we had today. Now, I went out and took some pictures and plan to have a photo gallery up at some point this evening. You know, we'll see how many pictures that I think are worthy of publication. I'm not the best processor of photos. I think I take good photos, but I probably need to go to a class. It's true. Got a really, really fancy camera. Probably spent more than I should. But, you know, when you're buying for your business, you want to buy the best, right? I mean, I wasn't going to go out there with just a Kodak disc camera and just say, let's you know, hope for the best. But nevertheless, I watched a lot of OLD line and then some backers and receivers. Now, next time we get out there, I'll watch some different personnel groups because I want to get pictures of them too. And earlier, in our, last week when we had our observation period, I watched quarterbacks a lot, tight ends a lot. Pretty impressed by that group. But let's start with offensive line. You know, based on early observations, you know, we don't get to watch any team drills. I want to be honest with you about that because, you know, I don't want people to get confused. You know, we don't get to sit there and watch every play at every practice. We only get about 30 minutes. It's not a few minutes. It's about 30 minutes. And it was supposed to be 20, and they stretch it to 30. So it's kind of cool when you get out there and think, hey, I got 20 minutes. I got to kind of get out here and get to work, and they give you, you know, 30 minutes. May even be a little bit longer than that. But yeah, it was great. But watching the offensive line, based on what I've heard and what I've observed, I think your starting five are going to be your four portal transfers and Albert Rees. That's what I feel like today. You just based on how they're lining up and kind of working through drills and things about, you know, you can observe a little bit. There's still a lot of work to do between now and the season. You know, somebody could compete, win a job. And just to kind of give you a recap there, Mac Pounders, by way of Bahia High School through Memphis, transferred to Mississippi State. This is a guy that was outstanding in Memphis. We expect him to handle one of the tackle spots, maybe left tackle, maybe right tackle. Cody Kennedy's still kind of figuring that thing out. And then there's Marlon Martinez, transferred in from LSU, a very highly rated recruit out of Florida. He didn't play a ton at LSU. Just saying it for what it is. And there's Jacoby Jackson, who played a lot at Texas Tech. And then there's Ethan Miner. And if you had a chance to watch our video, Ethan is hysterical. And again, all that team comments, that team content stuff is free. Unless we do a one-on-one interview or an exclusive interview, we're going to make it free. So even if you're not a member of Gene's Page, and you should be, but even if you're not, we want to be your source for Mississippi State information. So you can come, you know, view that for free. And even if you don't want to read the article, just want to watch a video on the very front page of our website under featured videos are the latest videos about Mississippi State. And it's kind of like a YouTube thing too. Like it just kind of have the infinite scroll. But I actually feel pretty good about the offensive line based on what I'm hearing and based on what I'm observing. And, of course, again, you can kind of fool yourself until they put the pads on. I mean, I know a lot of airport All-Americans, you know, look good in the uniform until it's time for the ball to be placed in the center of the field. You know, it's a little different dynamic. But based on so far, I think that's the way it's going to go. So Albert Rees and then four transfers. So be sure and you're kind of hanging there with you, you know. A lot of people were kind of worried, you know, what's this group look like? And it's like, you know, you think, hey, well, these guys were kind of recruited to run the air raid, and then now we're changing the scheme a little bit. We're going to be a little more run heavy. Do we have the Bulldog blockers to execute that scheme at a high level? Well, I don't think we did, so we went out and got them. Make sense? Sure it does. All right, defensive line. Now, it appears like they're still being kind of careful with Trevion Williams. You know, he got banged up last year. And let's be honest about that, too. At this point in camp, it's just about kind of making sure he's got his feet under him. We did get him in a player feature today. And, again, you can go read or view that for free over at jeanspage.com. And he spoke about how grateful he is to be back to good health. Trevion's a good guy. He is. And we need him to realize his potential. People forget he was one of the highest-rated players in his class. And we had to beat out a ton of schools to get him. And it seems like since he's been here, he just hadn't been able to get right. He's had some health concerns ever since he got here. But, I thought he looked good in what I saw in drills. But when they went to team stuff, the limited, you know, team stuff, he did not take reps. And, again, I think that's a precaution. I don't think there's anything wrong with him. I think it's just a precaution. Demonte Russell looks like an SEC defensive end. And it feels like he's been here forever. Most people that in his class that are still in college are doctors, you know, but he also had that medical year due to the fact that, remember the car wreck? Yeah, I ended up having a brain bleed and things like that. It just took a little while to kind of get him back. But, he looks like a guy that should be a productive player in this defense. Calvin Dinkins, you know, he was a guy that, you know, we beat Florida late for him. It wasn't a big surprise that we won. But he's another guy. Been kind of banged up ever since he got here. I mean, like last year, saw him pushing a cart around. You know, it's like people are like, well, you know, not exactly sure how long he's out. And then you know, I'm in the SEAL complex, and I see him come scooting by, you know, with his knee or his leg elevated in a cast, you know. And so he's another guy with a tremendous amount of potential, but been banged up. And so when you begin to think about defensive line depth, and people are like, hey, you know, we lost Crumberty, we lost Pick, and we did. Those guys were good players for us. But Dink and Trevion have a chance to be as good. Now, a guy that kind of flew under the radar when he committed to us, a lot of people were like, I don't know, is Derek Bingley Jones. He has looked good in the drills that I have observed. And of course, you know, we're watching drills against air, okay? But he looks to be very athletic. He also looks to have SEC size. And, you know, David Turner recruited him out of high school. And so there was a relationship there. And so we'll see how things progress there. But he looks like more than just a big body. There is some athleticism that kind of go along with him and the things that he brings to the table. So eager to kind of see. I think we're going to be pretty good.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
There in the middle. I still worry a little bit about Edge. I do. Because like outside of DeMonte, there's just not a lot. Of course, Dante Russell now is, you know, working some at Jack. So that'll be interesting, too. You know, how do we utilize him? Is he a pass rush specialist? A kid plays really, really hard. I remember after he got here, some people on the old staff says, I don't know if he'll ever play a meaningful snap, and then we end up having to put him out there and play. What does he do? Goes and gets a sack right out of the gate. You know, sometimes change is good. It is. Receivers, I try to go watch Chad Bumpus' group every time I go out there, just because of the fact we have so many of them. Number two, Chad Bumpus is so incredibly fun to watch as a coach. You never know what he's going to do, what he's going to say, but you kind of get a sense, you know, Chad, it's so interesting to call him Coach Bump, you know, because I met him when he was like 16 years old. But to see him out there and to see how involved he is in drills and things like that and the minor corrections he makes with guys, it's very intriguing type stuff. Now, Kelly Akari is running first in drills. And then Kevin Coleman is running second in drills. But Stonka Burnside and J.J. Harrell aren't too far beyond that first group. A lot of guys out there running around. Mario Craver looks great. And a lot of defensive players has kind of mentioned him as a guy that's a difficult draw in drills. So that's always interesting. Kevin Coleman, you may have seen, we had Kevin Coleman today. You can go watch video of his interview from today. All this stuff's already up. This happened today. It's already up, okay? You can go read about it or watch the video. But Coleman, after the video, after we got done, he comes by and shakes everybody in the media's hands. Hunter Washington, DB, did the same thing last week. And again, it's a respectful thing. I mean, like, hey, I don't need people to shake my hand to make me feel special, but I think it's interesting that these young men have decided, you know what, hey, I'm going to thank these guys for coming out, coming to practice, and giving me a chance to tell my story and represent my team. I like that aspect of it. Again, I don't need it. I don't require it. But I think it's very, very interesting that they offer that. I really do. But, Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story, too. And I won't say the player because it was all very lighthearted, but there was a message behind it. We had a player, I don't know, went through a drill. I hate to use the word whine, but there was an ouch used. And Jeff Lebby turns to him and calls him Charmin, you know, to tell him they're soft. And then Lebby asked him, he says, hey, do you need a hug? You know, so... You know, again, it's all lighthearted, but there's a message behind it. You know, it's like, hey, we want to be a physical football team. We're going to be a physical football team. But the thing that I'll tell you, too, with Coach Lebby, he's everywhere. And I mean that. He's everywhere. And like, a lot of head coaches, you know, stick to what they know and they say, hey, I'm going to just turn this over and, you know, have the autonomy of, you know, maybe I'm an offensive-minded coach. I'm not going to go watch a defense much, but Lebby moves around. I don't know what his step count is. I don't know if he does that, you know, the Apple Watch thing. But he's everywhere. You look up, he's with the quarterbacks over there talking to Matt Holchak. The next thing you know, he's with the receivers. He's over there with the backs. He's very, very involved in what's going on. And I don't know that we had as much of that last year. And that's not to be critical, okay? I'm not being critical of anybody. But I'm just kind of pointing out that Jeff Lebby is very much kind of the master of his domain, right? It's his team. And rather than just kind of sit back and say, well, I'm just going to let everybody do their deal, you know, he's very, very involved, and not just from an observation standpoint. If something's not right, he will personally correct it, or he'll get with the coach or whatever, you know. And I'm not saying that he's micromanaging. It's just that he is aware of what's happening on the practice field. I'm impressed. I mean, I am. And I remember there were some things that Zach Arnett did that impressed me, too. We just didn't win enough, right? I remember that was the thing last year. You know, the thing about Arnett was, you know, guys are ripping off tape and throwing Gatorade cups, and Arnett staying behind to pick that stuff up. That kind of stuff impressed me, right? I hadn't seen Jeff Lebby pick up any tape, but I've seen Jeff Lebby basically sprint around that field out there, you know, with purpose. A lot of people have asked about quarterbacks. You know, I think, you know, based on the limited periods we've been able to see, because we don't get to see them throw against the defense. You know, they may throw some one-on-ones, things like that. I think it's fair to say Shapen is the guy. I think it's pretty safe to say that Chris Parsons number two. And I think there's probably an appreciable gap between one and two, and that's not a criticism of Chris. It's just the fact that, number one, he is a redshirt freshman. This is his first year in a new scheme. But, man, I tell you this, that kid throws a pretty football. He does. And you saw some of that last year. You know, I think a lot of it's just kind of learning the nuances of the scheme. You know, people ask me, it's like, hey, Steve, I don't understand. Why don't we hear more about Chris Parsons? Well, number one, we don't get to see a lot. Number two, I think you've got an established starter with Blake Shapen. I think everybody understands Blake is QB1. And he should be QB1. You went into portal and you went out and got a guy that's going to be a senior to kind of give you a stopgap guy while the younger guys learn. Michael Van Buren throws a nice pass, too. Got to get Mike in the weight room. You know, Mike's got to get a little bit bigger. But people are already wondering, you know, hey, what does all this mean for Chris Parsons? I think Chris Parsons is on track. Again, he gets the red shirt year back, you know, because he only played, four games? He did not exceed the threshold to prevent a red shirt year, you know, so he's still got 4 years of eligibility. But I like watching Chris throw the football. And it doesn't matter if it's just, you know, against air. You know, but the ball just comes out of his hands. He knows how to spin the football. Mike Van Buren, sometimes you can tell, you got to learn a little bit of touch at times, but he's got a big arm too. Watch those guys kind of from a distance today as they, you know, work with the receivers. I was mainly focused on trying to get some good photos of the receivers. But, you know, in order to have a good completion, you got to have a guy throw a good pass. But, I think, you know, Mississippi State's best chance to win this year is Blake Shapen under center. And, again, that's not being critical of Chris Parsons. I'm a Chris fan. I think Chris is outstanding. And I think the best thing for Chris this year is, hey, you be the understudy, and then you have an opportunity to be the guy next year. I think that's what we would expect. You know, and let's be honest, the fact that we had to throw him out there and start him at A&M on the road, you know, that's asking an awful lot. Go to Kyle Field and play that game rather than playing a game at home against maybe a non-conference opponent. But Chris showed some flashes last year enough to keep people excited. So nobody out there should give up on Chris Parson, nor should you, right? I'm just kind of laying it out there for what it is. But, and again, I'm eager to see what Levy has to say after the scrimmage on Sunday. I wish we could watch it. I wish we could. And again, you know, first-year head coach, that there's some things you're going to want controlled. And let's be honest about that, too. And I'm going to – I've been on this – I've been covering Mississippi State for a long time. I've been writing about Mississippi State since 1997. Been with Gene Spade since 2001. And, of course, now I own the whole show. But, you know, we've had some people in the past, like, they just simply couldn't wait for something bad to happen so they could put it on Twitter. You know, and I can't count how many times there would be a guy go down in practice with a cramp, and then it gets pushed out to Twitter, and then you guys are freaking out. It's like, oh, my gosh, you know, we had a player go down today. Osiris Mitchell's down. You know, it was a cramp. You know, Dan Mullen, there were times that told us, hey, you guys can come to practice, but, you know, if a guy gets injured, I better not see anything on Twitter. And 99 times out of 100, nobody ever gets injured. But guys get beat up in practice. And sometimes there are fights in practice. And that's one of the things, too, that I don't think a lot of our fans understand. Some of our better teams used to get in scraps regularly. But you don't want everybody in the media out there videoing that. And you say, well, we see it in the NFL all the time. Those are professionals, right? But, it's always interesting, that aspect of it. We've had some people in the past, and trust me, not everybody that covers Mississippi State's a Bulldog. And even some of your favorite writers, you know, that especially those when things were not going well that would constantly pile on, and our self-loathing fans loved them. They loved them, not knowing that those people hated you. Oh, you didn't know? Yeah. Let me just tell you this, when people cover Mississippi State and it kind of sounds like they're an Ole Miss guy, and sometimes they have been, there's a reason that it sounds that way. It's not them being objective, no matter what some other people will tell you. I thought this guy was a great beat writer. Yeah, you thought so? Yeah. We've had some people in the past that couldn't write a practice report without mentioning, you know, NCAA troubles or, you know, Tutorgate or, you know, Dan Mullen's aftershave or whatever, you know, or, you know, Chris Simonis, you know, cut me off in traffic one day. You know, we've had people like that. That dates back years. Years. And it's so funny. Some of these people, like, you're not around, right? You just see what they write and think, oh, well, I interact with this person on Twitter. I got to be a good person. Not everybody's a good person. I'm just saying it for what it is. And I'm sorry if it hurt your feelings. It's true. I would venture to say the last few years have probably been the friendliest on the beat. And not just among us, but like for you guys. You know, as far as like people just kind of doing a job, you know, instead of like looking for an angle, trying to be provocative and go out there and, you know, search for controversy and things like that. The last, maybe 3 years or so, it's been a really, really friendly beat, not just for the reporters and journalists, but for the Mississippi State fans. Like, I give you Stefan Krasnick. I mean, I think he has been one of the better Clarion Ledger beat writers that we've had really in the last, you know, decade or so. I think that's a fair assessment, you know. And I think a lot of it, you know, Steph is not a gotcha journalist. Like, he's not going out there looking, oh, we found out that this guy, you know, hurt somebody's feelings, so let's go write a story about it, you know. You have had some people in the last 20 years that went out of their way to find as much negative news about Mississippi State as they could possibly put in the paper. And some of you folks loved them and thought they did a great job. You don't understand the burden that they placed upon the university and the athletic department by painting a narrative. And there were a lot of people, too, that, you know, they never wanted the job anyway. This is where they got sent. They needed a gig. They come in here and sit and, you know, we've had some people, and I won't name the paper because I really don't want to deal with it. But there's one paper in particular that it seemed like every beat writer they had, it was just like this, I don't know who was doing the hiring, And maybe it was the editor itself that was kind of like, hey, you need to be edgy. You need to do this. I can tell you that there was one publication that during the Mullen era that they absolutely did not want to deal with. Absolutely did not want to deal with. Because things would get, you know, twisted and turned. And, you know, I could write a book about all that stuff too. And maybe one day I will. But I think it's important that you guys understand. I really think... And, you know, when John Cohen was here, John Cohen is like one of the only guys that I knew that ever like stood up to the media. And I don't just mean like the Mississippi State media. I mean the national media. Like when somebody would say something, you know, derogatory about Mike Leach just for engagement, you know, John Cohen would have a conversation with those people. You know, there are other people out there that would go out of their way, try to find some way to twist something in a way to kind of, you know, cast aspersions at Mississippi State. Well, John Cohen looked out for you guys, looked out for the university's image, and made sure the truth was out there. I remember when we had the old, the old dust up in the pregame at the Armed Forces Bowl, right? And Kirk Herbstreit's out there saying Mississippi State came out there in violation of NCAA rules without having their numbers on. And it wasn't even time for that. We were out there dressed in accordance with the dress code based on the clock established by the NCAA for pregame. But Herbstreit didn't know that. Well, you know, John Cohen defended you guys. You know, and again, I think a lot of it too, and that's one of the things that maybe John doesn't get credit for. I think John, in many respects, kind of changed the way that Mississippi State handles the media. You know, in the past, we acted like we were just kind of helpless. Well, we can't stop them, and you're right, we can't stop them, but we can limit their access. Right? You know, so when some national guy, you know, reaches out and wants to write some pithy story about Mike Leach, and we know that that person is an agenda-driven journalist, is like, hey, I'd like to interview Leach. Okay, well, what's the scope of the interview? Well, I want to talk to him about COVID. No. Oh, well, I'd like to talk to him, you know, about politics. No. Well, can I talk to him, you know, maybe about Texas Tech? Maybe. Maybe. How about you send us a list of questions and then we'll see, you know. Wasn't always like that. Like somebody from the national media call, we were so desperate because we thought so little of ourselves. We got so desperate for coverage, we just say, well, whatever you want to do, you know. Not anymore. And I think that's, we talk about knowing your value and knowing your worth, and we talk about branding. I think that's a big part of it. You know, why in the world, God rest his soul, like Mike Leach, because, you know, Mike would say anything. Like, why would we agree to an interview to let Mike Leach talk about COVID restrictions, considering how controversial the topic was? You're like, Steve, that happened? Guys, we had somebody get on the SEC teleconference and go through every bit of that and ask every coach. You know, and, of course, they go back and write their one-sided piece about why they think, you know, the COVID restriction should be this. And I remember when, you know, Greg Sankey and those guys pushed to save college football. You had a bunch of journalists out there that they didn't want us to play. And there were people who even said, kids are going to die. You can go back. I'm sure those tweets still exist. At least they're in screenshots on somebody's phone. Guys, those journalists were calling Mississippi State. They just weren't getting anywhere. They wanted to attach Mike Leach's name to their one-sided, agenda-driven piece because they knew that Mike was big for engagement. And they wanted to do it at his expense. And certainly, Mike has never been a guy that will shy away from an interview or a microphone or anything like that, or, you know, a tussle or a debate. But the people of Mississippi State, it's like, nah, we're not doing this. We're not going to be part of this. He's our football coach. We're going to focus on football. You want to do an interview about football, we'll do that. But we're not going to sit out here and deal with political issues and controversial things. We're not going to do that. That's one of those things that kind of happens behind the scenes that I don't think a lot of our fans fully appreciate or even know about. All right, time for today's top 10 list, as always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair is my friend, your friend. You know what? He's our friend in the mortgage industry. You need a friend in the mortgage industry. It's amazing how you get through life by depending on your friends. And sometimes you have friends you haven't met yet. That could be the case with you and Blair Chandler. Whether you're looking for a game day condo, whether you're looking for the opportunity to refinance your home, maybe you're looking for your first home, maybe life has dealt you a curveball and it's time to kind of reset the deck. You know, take some stress out of your life and let Blair Chandler handle that mortgage piece for you. 23 years of experience in the industry, back to back to back, top 1% close ratios in the country, because he knows how to structure loans that gives you the best chance to get an approval. And here's the deal too, get pre-qualified. I can't stress that enough. Before you go out and start house shopping and start dreaming a little bit, kind of figure out what's within your means. Also too, once you get that pre-qualification letter, your real estate agent, and we have some great ones in the Mississippi State family, they will go into overdrive to help you find your new home, and Blair can help make that a reality. Phone number 601-500-2344, 601-500-2344. That's to Blair directly, not through a call center, not a receptionist, directly to Blair Chandler. He's one of us, season ticket holder, multiple sports. It's a place here in town. I'm telling you, we like to keep business in the family when we can. Blair Chandler is going to do a great job for you. Okay, I told you guys when we did a Super Tramp list last week, probably a little bit tardy on that, that Roy Simonte, every so often I let Roy put a list together for us. And Roy said, hey, I was asking him, I said, do you have a suggestion? And as he was debating his suggestion, I came up with Super Tramp. And we got some other ideas, too. I got to really think about it, right? I got to put some time and effort. I got to take a road trip, you know, and listen to some of the bands that you guys have recommended. But Roy's been after me. He goes, hey, maybe it's Noah Kahan, K-A-H-A-N, or Noah, I don't know how you pronounce it, Noah Kahan. I don't know. My apologies to the family. But he goes, maybe it's time for Noah. And I'm like, you know, I've never even listened to that. And he goes, oh, he's in recovery. He's got these great tracks. I said, I'll tell you what, Roy, put it together. And he believes that Noah will get more impressions than Supertramp. I disagree. So we've got a friendly wager on this. And so here is his introduction to his list. So if you like the list, give Roy the credit. If you don't like the list, you can, you know, tweet at Roy and say, Roy, what are you doing? Noah Kahan, or Kahan, is a singer-songwriter from New England. His lyrics reflect a life filled with depression, anxiety, and addiction, and recovery. He gained a following posting on TikTok and has now become one of the biggest touring acts selling out arenas around the world. I have a hard time believing that. Artists are lining up to collaborate with him. He's already done collabs with Post Malone, Zach Bryan, Brandi Carlile, Hozier, Casey Musgroves, Kelsey Ballerini, Julia Michaels, and Grace Abrams. He's also been nominated for a Grammy. Okay. Elsa, who is Roy's daughter, introduced Missy, which is Roy's wife, and he to the music, and he was drawn in by the lyrics. He goes, I'll highlight a lyric from each of my top 10 songs. So here we go. We'll start with an honorable mention. Sarah's Place with Zach Bryan. This is a Zach Bryan song featuring Noah, but one of my favorites. It's a fun song about an old friend and hangout. Not in my top 10, but a must listen. So there you go. Roy throwing out an extra track for it. Number 10, Northern Attitude. If I get too close, and this is some lyrics that he worked in. Like some of these are like observations and lyrics. I'll highlight a lyric from each of my top 10 songs. That's Roy. Number 10, Northern Attitude. If I get too close and I'm not how you hoped, forgive my Northern attitude. See, right out of the gate, see, I'm from the South. Okay, I'm taking a break here. I'm from the South. And I don't really take kindly to the Northern attitude. Maybe it all still runs deep with me. Back to our lyrics. So I was raised out in the cold. If the sun don't rise till the summertime, forgive my northern attitude. Oh, I was raised on little light. That's number 10 track. Number 9, All My Love. Our highlighted lyric here is, "You got all my love while I'm still out here with the pills and the dogs if you need me, dear. I'm the same as I was. It's all okay. There ain't a drop of bad blood. It's all my love. You got all my love." Number 8, orange juice. Our highlighted lyric, "Honey, come over. The party's gone slower and no one will tempt you. We know you got sober. There's orange juice in the kitchen, bought for the children. It's yours if you want it. We're just glad you could visit." I got to tell you, I'm not impressed so far. Number 7, our highlighted lyric here. "Call your mom. Don't let this darkness fool you. All lights turned off can be turned on. I'll drive all night. I'll call your mom. Oh, dear, don't be discouraged. I've been exactly where you are. I'll drive all night. I'll call your mom." Number 6, homesick. "I got dreams, but I can't make myself believe them. Spend the rest of my life with what could have been, and I will die in the house that I grew up in. I'm homesick." Roy, I'm about ready to drink reading these lyrics. Number 5, forever. "When forever was a sentence to death. Oh, when you were a running tear, I was a drop of sweat." That's kind of clever. "And the edges of your soul I haven't seen yet. Now I'm glad I get forever to see where you end." Number 4, "You're going to go far. You take me..." "You told me you would make a difference. Well, I got drunk and shut you down. It won't be by your volition if you step outside this town. But it's all we had for always." 3, "Growing sideways. But I ignore things and I move sideways until I forget what I felt in the first place. At the end of the day, I know there are worse ways to stay alive. Because everyone's growing and everyone's healthy. I'm terrified that I might never have met me." That's depressing. That's really depressing. Number 2, "Dial drunk." I've listened to these last couple just because I wanted to get a sense of the essence of all this. Number 2, "Dial drunk. I ain't proud of all the punches that I've thrown in the name of someone I don't no longer know for the shame of being young, drunk, and alone." And number 1, "Stick season. And I'll dream each night of some version of you that I might not have, but I did not lose." Well, that's kind of clever. That's nice and poetic, but I don't know. I'm not trying to tilt the balance of the competition here. But again, this is Roy's list. If you like Noah, then just go click on the link, right? Roy's going to tweet out, "Supertramp's already out there. We got a little bit of a head start. We want to be fair. We'll give it a few days. I'll give you guys the results." And again, I listened to this Stick Season and Dial Drunk. And he sounds a little bit like an Americana version of Paul Simon. I don't know many of you like Paul Simon. You're from Simon and Garfunkel. He had a great solo career as well. That's what it sounds like to me. So I'm not going to hate on Roy's list, but you know, Roy's taste. It's so funny, Roy. And Roy's my friend. But Roy, he can talk Iron Maiden with you, and then he gives you this, right? So there's a lot of versatility in the playlist that that Roy is going to put together. We give Roy a chance to have a voice on the show from time to time. It's part of the trade-out that we do. Roy's so great to our listeners to put these lists together on Spotify. You can find them on Spotify and find Roy on Twitter or X, whatever you call it these days, at Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. And all you got to do is click the link. We get the impression that way, and we'll calculate it and say, you know what, hey, here's where we are. I don't think either of these lists are going to make our top 10. And maybe that's an idea for us, is like we revisit our top 10, our top 10 most listened to or most impressionable list. And you'd probably be surprised. We'll go back and revisit. Hey, here's the top 10. And maybe give you the best song off those lists. Maybe that's something we do. Maybe that's an idea for next week. One of the things I'm thinking of for this week, and maybe it's tomorrow, is songs with an acoustic intro. Rock songs with an acoustic intro. You know, we'll probably throw some Alice in Chains in there. Throw some Warrant. You know, a lot of great 80s songs started with a bluesy intro. You know, I even go, maybe Magdalene from Winger makes a list. I don't know. We'll see how things go. But that's one of the things I'm kind of kicking around. rock songs with an acoustic intro. Yeah. The best ones, though. Not just somebody gets an acoustic guitar and a harmonica and just kind of, you know, they got to be able to play. Which means CC DeVille from Poison probably won't make the list. I kid, I know some of you really liked it. Matter of fact, I still think Poison is our number one all-time top 10 list. That's like you guys are trying to tell me something, you know. It's true. And the missus at some point says she wants to put a Nirvana top 10 list together. I don't know how I feel about that. It may cause some marital problems. But I'm not totally opposed, but I'm not doing it. But, of course, I think we all know that Smells Like Teen Spirit would probably be number one. I'd probably say Heart-Shaped Box number two, if I'm being fair. Outside of that, I'm just going to let you know that I'm not a huge fan of like In Bloom and things like that. It's just, you know, it's just not good. But that's my opinion. But anyway, that's what's kicking around for us. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, please let us know. You never know. Maybe just do it. We'll give you credit if you'd like. You can find me on all forms of social media at Scout Steve R. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart. I know you do too. You know, if you're looking for Mississippi State merchandise, look no further than Campus Bookmart. A lot of people claim to be your one-stop shop for Bulldog apparel and gifts and things like that, and they're just kind of pretenders to the throne. Not to mention, why wouldn't you want to support a Starkville business anyway? Don't you want to make Starkville thrive? Of course you do, right? And so even if you can't get here on game day, and maybe game day is a tough day for you to shop anyway. I know for me, it is. Like when I wake up on Saturday mornings, I'm ready to get to the game. I'm ready to get to the stadium. I'm ready to watch everything and take it all in. I'm ready to get out there and see you guys at tailgate too. So shopping isn't always a big part of my game day agenda. But, you know, hey, to make sure you've got your stuff, you know, visit them at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. And you order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. So whether you're looking for game day apparel or perhaps something to detail out the fan cave, maybe a housewarming gift, a wedding gift, a groom's gift, a bridal gift, whatever, graduation gift, you can find it at Campus Bookmart. The latest and greatest in everything related to Mississippi State sports. Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job. So be sure and throw your business in their direction. Again, that's Campus Bookmart. Okay. Well, one of the stories that we're continuing to track is the portal recruitment of former Washington middle infielder Ava Arquette. That's A-I-V-A. Ava Arquette, or Iva, probably the better pronunciation. He is from Hawaii and spent a couple years at Washington. Exceptional player. A lot of people expected that he was going to follow Jason to Texas A&M. Didn't work out that way. It looks like now that the final four are Arizona State, Mississippi State, Oklahoma State, and Oregon State. I'm told that Arizona State's kind of fallen out a little bit. They're trying to stay in it. And Arquette visited Mississippi State last week. It was a midweek visit. Spent the weekend in Washington and then flew home to Hawaii. And so now he's done taking visits, and a decision's expected here in the midweek. Could come as early as Tuesday, may linger into Wednesday. You know, we'll see. But I have traded some notes with some peers in the industry just to kind of see what everybody's hearing. And the thing that I come back to is it's not going to be an NIL deal. What I mean by that is if he chooses to go somewhere else, it's not going to be because Mississippi State did not use NIL as a weapon, because we certainly have. And I would venture to say that if he goes elsewhere, he's going for less money. And of course, you know, if we got some self-loathing State fans, it'd be like, you see, nobody wants to come here. No, everybody wants to come here. But here's the thing. A lot of these guys are trying to position themselves for pro baseball. Now, I think it's easy to make the argument the best thing to do is to go out of your way and go play in the best league in America. Because if you prove you can do it in the SEC, like Paul Skeens did, like Braden Montgomery did. And yes, those guys are going to be drafted, but you know what? They became household names by coming to the Southeastern Conference. And that the big stage isn't for everybody. There are a lot of guys that say, you know what? Hey, I'll just go somewhere smaller and put up some big numbers and sign a big check next year. But I would venture to say you'd probably sign a bigger check next year by proving you can do it in the Southeastern Conference. You know, Major League Baseball scouts are not dummies. You're not going to fool them into getting selected where you think maybe you should. You got to go out there and earn it. You know, that's one of the most important things with all this. But, you know, you start working through this and you begin to ask yourself, okay, you know, what does he bring to the table? Well, he played second base primarily at Washington. And you may not have heard, but, you know, we've got an opening there, some competition there. 6'4", 220-pounder. All Pac-12 guy. Of course, the Pac is no more. Washington has moved on. Oregon State remains without a conference. Now, they have put together a scheduling agreement for football with the Mountain West. They haven't joined it, but they've kind of got an agreement. They're going to schedule some games, and that's a great thing for everybody involved. You know, there'll be a lot of those schools up there to have a chance to go play at Oregon State for the first time. And I understand Oregon State's, you know, working through putting together a competitive baseball schedule. But, you know, it's interesting how much of a shortfall are they going to have financially without the Pac-12. Now, I don't know when their payday ends, but those are things you begin to think about. You don't just like, okay, well, I'm retiring in a year, so I'm going to spend like I always have. Now, you make those adjustments now. But you know, some folks at Oregon State have told me, hey, they're going to have a very ambitious schedule. They're going to play Dallas Baptist. They're going to play Grand Canyon U. They got UC Irvine going up there. They're going to play Long Beach. And Oregon State, you know, last year they were kind of a bubble host team. And, of course, they didn't make it. And then they lost a lot from that team. They're kind of selling the fact, hey, we got a lot of regulars coming back. But Oregon State, if memory serves me correct, they had seven players taken. Let's double-check that. Right, we don't have to guess. Well, it turns out we're correct. Yeah, there's seven Oregon State players that were drafted. That's not an insignificant number. And, of course, Travis Bazana, the second baseman, originally from Australia, number one pick in the draft. You know, signing bonus of nearly $9 million. And then there's Aiden May, who went in the competitive balance B round as a 70th pick. Aiden May, pitcher. Signed for $900,000. Jacob Kmatz in the fifth round of Tampa Bay. Signed for just under $400,000, right at $400,000. Bridger Holmes, pitcher, $215,000. Elijah Hainline, shortstop. So they're losing both middle infielders, and so you can kind of see why there's some urgency here. $200,000. And then Mason Guerra signed in the 14th round with the Braves, and then Micah McDowell, a outfielder, signed for $100,000. And so you start working through this. Again, you know, you lose basically three-fourths of your infield and an outfielder. So, again, there are some regulars that are back. It's not like the cupboard is bare. But Travis Bazana was a dude, and I'm sure that's what they're selling. It's like, hey, we think you can come in here and you know, we think you can come in here and be the next Travis Bazana. And so does he have that kind of ability? Well, some would say maybe. I don't know if he's a top 10 pick right now, but if he comes to the SEC, he certainly could be. Would he be the first pick in the draft? I don't think so. But when you start working through this, in 2 years at Washington, we can kind of see the progression. As a freshman, he hit 244. He hit 325 last year. So really nice ascension there. And a lot of us just getting reps. But he is a 311 hitter in college. 63 games, only played in 15 as a freshman, played in 48 last year. So he's played in 60 college games, or started 60 college games. He has 60 starts and 63 games played. 79 hits, 14 doubles, all those came last year, the triple last year as well, and 12 home runs. He had 5 home runs as a freshman, so it's not like he just kind of came out of nowhere. 36 ribbies last year. 17 walks against 40 strikeouts. So 40 strikeouts and 209 at-bats. The strikeout rate may be a little bit higher than you'd like, but when you've got guys that are hitting double-digit tanks, you kind of got to live with some of that. He had 6 stolen bases last year. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like about him. And again, the Major League Baseball scouts love him. Most people have him projected as a first-rounder next year. And so you bring him in, you know, and especially because of the fact that he can play second, he can play third, can play a little bit all over, can play. He hadn't played a ton of short, you know, and I honestly think you start thinking about what, you know, what's best for your ball club. You know, I think you got him working with second. I think you have Dylan Cup at short. And then all of a sudden you've got, you know, Dylan Cup, who is an elite defender. And there were some people that had a first-round grade on him out of high school. Just felt like, hey, the hitting piece has got to come around. And again, the last seven games, before he got hurt, he was hitting .295 during that stretch. So you start thinking about Cup, an MLB prospect at short. Arquette, an MLB prospect at second. Hunter Hines back at first. Be some nice competition at third. Ace Reese, Garrett Frather, Sawyer Reeves. All those guys are going to play in some capacity. Of course, there's Noah Sullivan at DH. I mean, sometimes you forget what all we've got. But you think about adding one more bat. And how many times last year do we have situations where guys would go ice cold and you just simply couldn't sit them because you didn't have anybody better? I reiterated that many times on the show. This is not a depth piece situation, though. This is a guy like right now, I think, are we capable of getting to Omaha? I think we are. You add this guy to the mix, I know we are. Because you start thinking about, you know, what that does to your order. You know, the teams that find production in the bottom third of the order and find a Sunday starter typically go to Omaha and typically win pretty big. Does it make sense? Well, you know, you can kind of do the math yourself. You know, you got to get hot late. But the reality of it is there's so many teams out there that are jockeying for position. And this is not going to be a year in the SEC where a ton of teams return a lot of veteran players. Again, if I had to vote right now, I would not even have to hesitate. I would have A&M preseason number one. Absolutely no question about it. And I understand they got a first-year coach, and they may drop some games they shouldn't. But as far as talent goes, I think they're going to be the most talented team in the country. And, of course, you think about – I mean, you're bringing so much of the pitching rotation back. You know, Lampkin and Prager are legit left-handers. And you got Laviolette coming back. You know, you lose Braden Montgomery. I don't think they're going to miss a beat. But I will tell you, I didn't think that team last year had the depth – in that length of that order to really scare you to death. When we went and played them, I said, you know what, I think we're actually the better team. And we went out there and we lost a series. And, of course, you know, Morris Hodges helped. But, yeah, they're going to return some dudes that played for a national championship. You know? And so that's something to understand, that they got so close last year. And we're, you know, really, you know, one half inning away from winning their program's first ever NFL championship. They're going to bring a ton back. Outside of them, it's kind of a hodgepodge deal, right? Arkansas, you can't ever count out the Razorbacks. And now that they haven't won one yet, Dave Van Horn, probably the most consistent coach in our conference. You know, they're going to be good. And they should be. LSU, number one portal class in the country. But, you know, the thing that I go back to with those guys – is in 2023, they already had a good team returning. They were already a really good team. And you add Tommy Tanks to it, you add Skeens. I mean, you know, well, yeah, to what you already have. But the nucleus of that team was already in place. They already had some esprit de corps. Those guys were already really good and expected to be good. And then you worked the portal as well as they did. Turns out that they should have been great, and they were. Now, last year, they went kind of portal crazy. And it took a while to kind of figure things out. Like, it took a while for that team to gel. And they're kind of following that same path this year. So, I think, obviously, LSU has a chance to be really good. But you're going to have to hit on all these portal guys. They're losing a ton. Had a ton of guys go in the portal. So, as a result, you got to sign a bunch of guys to replace them. And really kind of devastated that 2023 signing class. You know, a lot of those guys aren't around anymore. And so those are the things you kind of begin to think about. And then, you know, you can run through the league. It's going to be the usual suspects, but I look at a team like Ole Miss, and you guys know, as much as I don't like Ole Miss, I have a tremendous amount of respect for Mike Bianco. And Mike Bianco is kind of dealing with what Chris Simonis dealt with for a little bit. And it's just proof positive this is such an unforgiving league. If you ever get to the bottom, it is so difficult to claw your way out of it. Because you say, well, you hit the portal hard. Well, you know, guys are not willing to gamble. You know, really talented players are not going to say, you know what, hey, I want to go be part of a rebuild. No, they want a chance to go to Omaha. It's not just I want to go make a regional. I want to go somewhere I have an opportunity to get to Omaha and potentially win a championship. And so as a result, they're not even going to listen to you. You can say, yeah, you can offer all the NIL money in the world. But many of the guys that you're chasing are going to be signing six-figure checks next June or July. And so it's not going to be a scenario where you're like, yeah, I'm not going to gamble this away. You know, hey, you're offering me $100,000. I'll take 50 to go somewhere else where I've got a chance to play for something significant because I'll make that 50 grand up next year. And so it's so incredibly difficult. And a lot of people say, you know, it shouldn't be difficult because you have the portal. Well, you got to think about the psyche of the players you're recruiting from the portal. And more times than not, it's veteran guys. It's typically not freshmen just looking for a reboot or looking to get closer to home. And again, as I shared with you guys before the portal really got rolling, you know, we don't have feeder schools within our state like they do in Texas and Florida. And in some respects, South and North Carolina, we don't have that here. You know, there's not a guy that can go to Southern Miss. Guys at Southern Miss don't leave. And again, I think that speaks well of that program. But, you start working through this Arquette thing, and you start dreaming a little bit, right? And Chris Simonis really needs a big portal win, right? I mean, it's like you didn't get Paul Skeens, and I understand that. I understand it for the reasons that we just mentioned. And it boiled down to LSU and Mississippi State. And Skeens elected to go to LSU. Wins an NFL championship, first pitch in the draft. Worked out well for him. Now, if he had come to Mississippi State, I think Mississippi State's not going to be an NFL championship team, but certainly would have been a lot better with a pitcher of his caliber on Friday night. Scott Foxhall may still be your pitching coach, too. That's how significant that decision was. You know, last year, you know, the Luke Coleman thing, a lot of people try. And listen, we certainly wanted Luke Coleman, but in the end, Cal Steven proved to be a better pitcher. You don't have to take my word for it. You look at the postseason accolades and the draft results. Yeah, Cal Steven, better job. Justin Parker, I think, better job developing. And I think Luke Coleman, if he had come to Mississippi State, probably could have been in a different situation. Of course, if Luke comes, Cal doesn't come. That's always something to consider too, right? People forget Cal Steven wasn't an early commitment. It was once Luke Coleman picked LSU, we got really, really excited about Cal Steven. We were already on it. Kind of turned up the heat then and got it done. And Cal Steven, of course, really, really did a great job at Mississippi State. But this is not a scenario where, you're just kind of, you know, hoping for the best. This is a difference maker type player. I think a lot of our fans would say, you know what? I don't know that we're truly back until we win one of these big battles. Because, you know, the Braden Montgomery thing last year, you know, you had all of the – we talk about not wanting to come home. And in the end, Braden Montgomery really didn't want to come home, but you had a Mississippi guy in the portal that you had connections with, and you had a great relationship and rapport with the family, a lot of people around him, and you didn't get him. That's the thing you began to think about. What would this team have looked like this year with Luke Coleman and Braden Montgomery in the lineup, right? Well, you'd probably be in Omaha competing for an NFL championship. Would you not agree? I mean, let that sink in for a second, right? You know. That's the reality of the situation. I mean, how many times this year were we a bat short? Pitcher short. Of course, you know, again, you know, Cal wouldn't be here. Holman would have been. But I think from an optics standpoint, you know, Chris Simonis needs to win this one. I don't think it sinks us by any stretch of the imagination. I think most people feel the same way. But it begins to kind of elevate your expectations. He's like, hey, will you go out and get a guy like this, a potential first rounder to add to your lineup? That makes you a much more formidable team. And I like what we've done in the portal. I think we have a really good class in the portal. And if you follow 64 Analytics, they agree. But you go out and you add Arquette, you go from having a really good class to having a great class. A great class. And I think that's something to get excited about. And so, again, I think we're going to be a really good club next year anyway. But I think this young man, if we're able to add him, makes you a great club. And I think the expectations, you know, where are we, preseason 16 right now, according to Baseball America? You add Arquette to the lineup, I think you automatically go into the top 10. You go into the top 10, obviously, you know, you move from being a potential host spot to being an Omaha pick. That's how significant it is. And again, we're going to be good either way, but I'd love to be able to add him. I know you all feel the same way. And again, we could have a decision as early as tomorrow, potentially on Wednesday. So maybe when we get together tomorrow, you know, we'll have some information. Hopefully we're celebrating a decision. But if not, I hope that we won't just completely, you know, walk away from all the progress that we've made in this offseason, because you and I all felt the same way. You know, right after the regional's over, it's like, man, that lineup is going to really struggle next year. You know, we really got to hit the portal hard. We have. And we got a chance to come out the end of this thing, you know, maybe being having a top two, top three type portal class. And, again, that's the neighborhood in which we live in, you know, with the SEC. You know, you simply cannot afford to not be aggressive in a portal. And I think that's a lesson that we learned, you know, after the NAFL championship year. I think we learned that. I think we thought we had enough pieces coming back that we could go back and contend. And in 22, obviously, the injuries got to us. And then, you know, then all of a sudden, it becomes one of these things. It's like, hey, I'm chasing players. We're only a couple pieces away. We think you're one of them. It's like, hey, coach, you didn't even make Hoover last year. I'd love to come there. I love the facilities. I love the support from the fans. I love the fact that you guys just won a NAFL championship 2 years ago. But I want to go to a program that's ascending. I don't want to be going to a program that may be descending. I've only got 1 year to get this thing right and prove to the scouts that I'm one of the best players in America, and I don't know that I can do that at your program. And that's cruel, but it's fair. You kind of understand it. And so now all of a sudden you go out there and you take care of you know, getting back to a regional, and we all agree that we gotten through Virginia. We had a really good chance to get to Omaha. Kansas State obviously would have come into Duty Noble Field, and I think you guys would have helped wield this team to Omaha. You never know what happens from there. But, yeah, it feels like a missed opportunity, but it's so interesting. A lot of people that make that claim beginning of the year said we weren't even going to make a tournament and probably wouldn't even make the Hoover, you know. And, you know, again, I think it's not about who's right or wrong now. I think it's time for us to kind of get behind the program. And I think it's – if Arquette – announces for Mississippi State, I think it really quiets down a lot of the noise, right? Because you want a player of that caliber to choose you. But I'm pleased with what I've heard from the Oregon State side about maybe their concerns about Mississippi State. You know, that Mississippi State's NIL offer is significantly more than theirs. They understand from a facility standpoint. You know, they're just kind of hoping that he wants to stay in that part of the country, and maybe he does. But I don't understand how a kid from Hawaii would say, you know, I've just found a home here in Pacific Northwest, and I'm going to move a state down. It's not like he's leaving Washington and going across town. He's going to Corvallis, Oregon. You know, and that's not a criticism of Corvallis, but it's not like he's going to be able to maintain, you know, going to lunch with the same group of people. You know, it's a completely dynamic. You're changing states. And so it's not just, hey, he loves the Pacific Northwest. Well, you know, he may love that. I love the South, too. And, you know, I'm the kind of person, wherefore I am, I shall be content. But the reality of that is, you know, when I left Baton Rouge and came to Starkville, you know, that's in the South, too. But I left all those friendships and relationships behind. And in time, you know, they just kind of become names on a Facebook feed. This is how life works. So, again, tomorrow night when we get together for your midweek show, hopefully we'll have an answer for you. And at this point, I can't call it. I like some things that I've heard, you know, about Mississippi State. I'm concerned about some things I've heard about Oregon State. And I wouldn't count out Oklahoma State either. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think anybody can afford to sleep on them. I understand he had a great visit there. We'll see what they do. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Just Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Very simple. Google's your friend, even though it's a corporate sellout these days. You can Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page will kind of auto-populate for you. You can look through the pictures that are available and peruse the fine amenities that are available only to you at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You'll see that great living room area, 5 bedrooms, 2 baths, that great back porch area, the full-service kitchen, so you can run the town, stock up, and everybody just take turns cooking all weekend. Maybe you can eat out. It's up to you. But there's also that wet bar, the fire pit area, too. Whether it's a midweek crew you're bringing to Starkville, the Golden Triangle area, where you're going to be working around the area, this is better than get 5 hotel rooms. This is a much better value. You can have some communal areas where you can work together and kind of retreat to your own quarters. I've told you guys before, you know, it's nice having all the kids under one roof, right? And the kids get older, it's more difficult to do that. They begin to develop lives and families of their own. But everybody kind of reunites around Mississippi State sports, whether it's basketball weekend, baseball weekend, football weekend, no matter what the weekend is, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse has got a spot for you. The best place to stay in the Golden Triangle, and it's not even close. Now, when you Google, some booking options are going to come up. Airbnb, VRBO are part of that. You can go that route if you want to. But if you want to save some money, book through the Evolve website. Promo code BSR10. BSR10 gets you 10% off your stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. My friends have used it. They loved it. It's a great experience for them. They plan to stay there again when they come back to the area. You will too. So rather than having everybody scattered all over the county trying to figure this thing out, just stay at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. It's kind of tucked away, a little quiet, little residence there. Not a small residence, but it's your own little piece of heaven, right? Only one neighbor out there. We don't want you getting too rowdy, but you kind of understand you want some peace and quiet when you come to Starkville, kind of the calm before the storm, a place you can retreat to quickly, a place that you've got some privacy. This is the way to do it, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. All right, final segment is our opponent preview of Texas A&M. Now, this you look at this game and say, okay, it should be a toss-up, but you know what? It's really a good spot for them because they're coming in off an open date, and we're getting Texas and then an open date and then Georgia and then A&M. I had a friend today said, you know what, Steve? I think we're going to beat A&M and go 7-5. I think you're going to have to go 7-5. I think you're going to have to beat Texas A&M. And what's so interesting about this A&M team is you really don't know what to expect. You know, we didn't know what to expect last year, and we went down there and lost to a third-team quarterback, and we looked so incredibly unprepared. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something else that's interesting. We had some reports, you know, that Wegman wasn't going to be ready to play, and even in post-game, people were telling us, well, we prepared for Wegman. And it looked like it too. It looked like we did not expect this young man to play, despite the fact that we had some insider trading and some insider information there that it wasn't going to be Wegman. But somehow, some way, we decided that was the case, and we prepared and built a defensive game plan around that. And then we had this very athletic dual threat quarterback that absolutely wore us out. And of course, that brought an end to the Zach Arnett era. I think the only reason that he didn't get fired on Sunday is because of the fact that Zach Selman and members of the administration were out of the state at the time. Looking back at last year, the Aggies go 7-6, 4-4 within our conference, 6-1 at home. They open up with a big win over New Mexico, right? 52-10. They didn't lose at Miami, 48-33. They bounce back and take care of Louisiana Monroe 47-3. They get Auburn 27-2 at home, and that was, again, kind of a toss-up game. And in this league, toss-up games tend to favor the home team. That was the case that day. It really wasn't a close ball game. Auburn offense couldn't get much going. Well, then they go to Arlington and take care of Arkansas. And, you know, that's been a very fun game. Like, they play that thing at Jerry World. It's been really fun. Like, if you're a fan of SEC football, for some reason, no matter the records, that A&M-Arkansas game is typically very entertaining. Well, A&M wins that game. And so they bring the winning streak to 3 games there. You think, okay, all right, things are going to be okay. Maybe Jimbo makes it. Alabama's coming in. You got a chance to beat them. Last time you did. And they lose 26-20. And again, it wasn't one of these Alabama teams you looked at and said, hey, they're just a dominant force. But that, even though they lost the game, I think it showed that A&M had some fight in them. Well, then, The next week, they go to Neyland and they lose 20-13 to Tennessee. So now all of a sudden you start thinking, you know what, we've already got three losses. This thing's not going to work out. They bounce back and take care of South Carolina 30-17. Then they lose at Vault Hemingway in a barn burner of a game, 38-35. A game that we were all cheering very fiercely for the Aggies. And then they beat us 51-10 and then fire their coach. When is the last time you've seen somebody win a game by 41 points and then fire the coach? You know, we scored on the opening kickoff. You know, Ra-Ra ran it back. And we're like, hey, we got a chance. You know, hey, we can do something here. No. It's terrible. It's one of the only times in my career of covering Mississippi State that I could not wait to get out of the stadium. Absolutely could not wait. I remember going to my message board and writing, this cannot continue. And Zach Arnett was so laid back in postgame. He knew. We all knew. It was done. And listen, Dr. Mark Keenum is the guy that never wants to embarrass a coach. Even if we never going to fire somebody, it's like, hey, you know, we can go ahead and start putting feelers out and we can allow the coach to have a little dignity and finish out the campaign. But as embarrassing as that loss was, and when I think about embarrassing losses in my Mississippi State career, this one is near the top. It's not at the top, but it's near the top. This wasn't a great A&M team. They blast us. They blast ACU. And ACU held them at 38 points. They go down to LSU and lose 42-30 and then end up in the Texas Bowl and lose to Oklahoma State 31-23. So incredible to think about what's unfolded at College Station here the last few years. You know, that Ross Bjork puts him in that really, really one-sided deal with Jimbo Fisher. And listen, I commend people that get things done. But it was clearly a bad decision. It's also a very expensive one. Now, when you begin to think about A&M this year, you know, Mike Elko's there. It was a coaching search that was a little bit wild, I guess we could say. And ultimately, they got the guy that everybody thought they were going to get initially, Mike Elko. Makes a lot of sense. It's some good years at Duke. They open up the season August 31st, 6:30 p.m. against Notre Dame. Got the Irish coming into Kyle Field. And I think A&M's in trouble. The next week, McNeese State will make the trip. That should be an easy win, make it 1-1. And then the Aggies go to Florida. Now, if you're a Mississippi State fan, you'd like to see A&M win this game. You know, I want Florida to limp into to Davis Wade Stadium with a 1-2 record. I want them to lose to Miami and then lose to A&M. And I'm just curious if A&M truly has the athletes to go on the road and win this game. Again, Florida hadn't been a great road team, but, you know, if they find a way to beat Miami and A&M and come to Starkville 3-0, they'll have a full head of steam, and anything can happen in this league. But I like the Aggies to win this game, and I can't really explain why. Maybe it's just because I don't have any faith in Napier. And I think the pressure is going to get to him. And Mike Elko, of course, has proven to be a very offensive-minded coach. All right, the next week's Bowling Green. So, again, you think they lose Notre Dame and probably going to put together a nice little winning streak here. Because after that Bowling Green game, they go and play that game in Arlington against Arkansas. And I think Arkansas is going to be a lot worse than people expect. I know they basically picked them one spot ahead of us. I don't think they're better than us, and I think we'll show that on the field. I just don't think Arkansas has enough pieces to formulate a team this year that's going to be able to do things against Southeastern Conference opponents. So I like the Aggies to win there. And then they get Missouri. And Missouri, you know, we don't play them until deeper in the year. Missouri didn't really get a great schedule this year. You know, last year they kind of had, you know, they had to deal with the East, but they had a pretty good schedule. They got a lot of those games at home that were kind of toss-up games. And so A&M, of course, will get Missouri. That's, again, a toss-up game. Those tend to favor the home team. But I think Missouri, a more veteran team, may be able to go in there and get that one. Then there's the open date. They play at State on the 19th. And then they go to LSU. Excuse me, they host LSU and then go to South Carolina. And then New Mexico State, the Aggies will head in there, Valley Aggies. Then it's at Auburn. And then, of course, they finish up at home against Texas. And so you start working through here a lot of toss-up games here. And so I don't expect A&M to contend for much this year, but when you begin to think about this schedule, it could be 6-6, or theoretically it could be 9-3. I mean, anything's possible. But you start counting down here. Of course, again, let's just kind of count the ones we expect them to win. We expect them to beat McNeese. We think they'll beat Florida. They'll beat Bowling Green. They should beat Arkansas. The Missouri thing, again, kind of a toss-up. Mississippi State, a bit of a toss-up, but I don't like where it lies on the schedule for us. And so let's say they split those two, right? Well, you know, then you got LSU coming in. I think that's a loss. They go to South Carolina. That may be a win. You got New Mexico State that makes you bowl eligible. You go to Auburn. I don't think Auburn's going to be decidedly better. They're going to be better at the wide receiver position. And then you play Texas. And so, yeah, maybe 6-6, 7-5. Probably dependent on what happens in this Missouri-Mississippi State stretch. But, yeah, first-year coach Mike Elko, and I think he'll do a good job there. Will he do enough to satisfy those fans? Because, again, Texas is going to be really good this year. I think everybody will probably admit that. Texas expected to be really, really good. And I don't know that Texas is a team that you really want to play in the playoff. You know, neutral site games, all that kind of stuff, all that's great. But I think Texas is one of those teams that you really want to avoid this year. Now, kind of looking back at the numbers last year, and again, you know, there's only so much you can draw from this with a new coach coming in. But there's, you know, there's some personnel stuff, you know. And I think, you know, Connor Wegman's a guy that, you know, provided he stays healthy, got a chance to be a really good quarterback in this league, and they'll probably go as far as that as he can carry them. But last year scored 33 points a game, allowed 22. And you would say, well, you know what, they probably should have done better. It's just whether they routed their non-conference opponents for the most part outside of Miami. Still scored a lot of points in that game. You know, pretty balanced offense last year for the most part. Probably skewed a little more on the passing game. And some of that, too, is because in some of these games they were behind. But total offense last year, 5,290 yards and 35-20 coming through the air. They did score 51 touchdowns. Allowed just 34. Yeah, defensively, A&M's had some dudes at times. They've lost some guys in the portal, too. But, yeah, third downs, 43%. Fourth downs, 55%. But you look at these numbers, and again, you know, people talk about Jimbo, and, you know, Jimbo's probably the luckiest guy in the world, to be honest with you. All right, Amari Daniels last year led them in rushing 532 yards, and it was really kind of by committee because, you know, Le'Veon Moss got hurt. That was one of those things that we thought about, too, you know. They were so banged up in the backfield and starting third-team quarterback, thought we'd go in a chance and win that game and get bowl eligible. Didn't work out. Connor Wegman played in just four games last year. It's pretty remarkable. And Marcel Reed, that's the guy. That's the enemy of the state right there. Former transfer quarterback from Fresno State. And like you pull up his profile here on the A&M website and I guess that wasn't a kid from Florida or Fresno State. Anyway, you know my point here. The bottom line is that there were so many things that happened last year and so many injuries, and people just really weren't willing to overlook that. You know, it just simply – it was Jalen Henderson, my mistake, Jalen Henderson that transferred in from Fresno. And like all of you, I have done my best to try and block that game from my memory. And again, you pull up his profile here, and it's him scoring a touchdown against Mississippi State. I hate to see teams have highlights against us. You know what I mean? It's just like defining moments. But again, you know, Wegman last year, a little bit banged up. You know, played in four games. Expected to be the dude, kind of moving forward. You know, Max Johnson, you know, that's the thing. That's the thing. Max Johnson, there was a talk about him playing. And remember, he transferred in from LSU, expected to be the guy. This hadn't worked out. Yeah, Wegman won it, and then Max Johnson ends up being the starter for a lot of other games. Got banged up in that game before they played us last year. And we prepared to play Max Johnson, who's a much different quarterback than Jalen Henderson. And again, it showed on the field. That's one of those things, too, the more you find out about that stuff, it's like, how in the world could we have – thought, hey, you know what? He'll be there. Now, thankfully, Anaya Smith, you know, this guy here, you talk about a kid that has done some amazing things. Really glad that he's no longer part of the equation over there. But, yeah, kind of working through all the, you know, roster changes. And that's the thing, you know, when you think about what everybody has. I had a friend message me earlier. He goes, it's hard to even get excited because you don't know not only what you have, but you don't know what anybody else has. And that's true. Because, like, you have guys that move in from conferences you're unfamiliar with. You really don't have much of a scouting report. As rudimentary as that is, you just don't. You kind of think you do, and you hope you do, but when guys move up from another conference, you never know how they're going to acclimate. You never know what they're going to do, what they're going to produce or provide. It's pretty amazing. It's so hard to keep up with things, which I think makes our job all the more important over at jeanspage.com, but it is one of those deals where you feel like you have an idea. If what a team has coming back is like, oh, yeah, remember they were a senior-laden team. And then you go to 247 Sports and go to the transfer portal and you pull up and you can see, oh, well, they added this guy, they lost that guy. You know, the rosters are always in a constant state of flux at the end of each semester. You know, it's just kind of how things are. And I'll save you the trouble. Texas A&M had 28 new transfers in the offseason. 28. Now, a lot of these guys, not exceptionally highly recruited or highly rated transfers. A lot of three-star type guys. Nick Scorton, of course, that was a young man that we recruited. Didn't get much traction with him. Arguably the top edge in the portal out of Purdue, headed to A&M. That's pretty significant. They also added a Cassius Howell from Bowling Green. Somehow he managed to get a four-star as a transfer. And so we'll see kind of how that kind of plays out itself. But it's also interesting to me, like Cyrus Allen was a guy that we were on, goes to A&M. But they also had 31 transfer outs, and a lot of those guys were scholarship players. So, again, you know, it's like, hey, you bring in a full class, and then you bring in a whole class of transfer guys. It's a lot like Mississippi State. You know, they're going to have over 50 new players. I mean, we got over 40. They got over 50. So they're going to flip the roster. And by the time that we have a chance to play them, you know, hopefully they'll have some level of continuity, at least not for our sakes. We probably like to be in a situation where they're, you know, still trying to figure some things out. But it's so incredible to look at this and see how these first-year coaches are just kind of transforming their roster. And looking at the A&M transfer outs, you know, like you look at some of these schools and a lot of them never find another school. There's only one of the noted transfers. Of course, Walter Nolan transferred from A&M to Ole Miss, and now we got to deal with him there too. You know, that was a very significant transfer. And so, you know, what can you expect from A&M? You know, I don't think you know any more about A&M than you know about Mississippi State. Yeah, so we'll see how things shake out. But, yeah, it's a toss-up game, and I would think both teams on equal footing, the game at Mississippi State would favor Mississippi State. But what kind of shape are we going to be in physically after playing Texas and then Georgia? The good thing is we do get an open date in there in between those two games. But that is something I think it's important to understand, too, that it is a long season, and the grind of an SEC schedule is very real. So A&M gets us at a good time for the Aggies. If I had to call it today, I'd probably call it a loss. And by the time we get here on game day, I'll have convinced myself we're going to win. But again, we don't know what A&M is even going to look like by the time they get here. Nobody knows what either of these teams will look like by the time they get together. I do consider it a toss-up, but it's not one that I've penciled in as a win for the Bulldogs. Some of you have. I just don't like where it lies on our schedule. Hey, if you hadn't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com and you can pre-order The Dude. Next month, you know, we'll have should have books for you next month. I'll have an actual release date here very, very soon. And we look forward to getting that book out to you. It takes about 6 weeks to get a book printed, thereabouts. It's a good average time. Wasn't like it was with Dogpile. It took forever and a day. But we'll have a release date soon. All books ordered through the official website, dutynoblebook.com, will be signed. So if you'd like a signed copy, you can get that. You don't have to go chase me down at a book signing or anything like that. We'd love to see you. But many of you don't make it back to Starkville or state of Mississippi very often. And I do some road signings, obviously. Sometimes it's hard to do those on game day weekends. It truly is. So I share that with you because I think this is a piece of Mississippi State history you're going to want to own for yourself. While you're there, you can get all of my sports titles. And, of course, When the Bottom Falls is there as well. If you're a person that is in recovery, a person that suffers with substance abuse, or you know and love somebody that does, you can find a copy there too. Those are also signed. And again, come float with us, 662-268-7601. I mentioned that earlier part of the show. But listen, be back again tomorrow night. Don't know what time, but it'll be tomorrow night. That'll be as your midweek show. And we'll preview another opponent. We'll give you some updates on the Ava Arquette. I'll get it right. I'll figure it out. So we think tomorrow we'll have some information for you on that as well. So we look forward to that. Hopefully, it's a good day for Mississippi State. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends and enemies and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.